This episode of the Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico podcast is brought to you by Spectacle Eyewear. Now, if you've been watching any episodes of this podcast on our YouTube channel, you might have noticed I've been wearing some pretty cool specs lately. Well, you know where I get them? Spectacle Eyewear, 505 Tremont Street, Boston, Massachusetts. Their phone number is 617-542-9600. Head down to Spectacle. Go visit our friend Paul. You'll get yourself some cool specs.
I wish you well. I wish you love. I wish myself the world I'm dreaming.
Welcome to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Today, we have not only one of the coolest rock stars to emerge in the 90s, but one of my personal favorites. Singer, guitarist, songwriter, composer, leader of the great band That Dog, Anna Warnaker is on the show. You just heard that fantastic tune, I Wish You Well, from Anna's 2002 debut solo album, with the great lyric, "You take me on a ride with you. It's a roller coaster. The only time I look at you is on a rock and roll poster." I could totally relate to that quote. That's right. The multi-talented Anna Warnaker, who these days has been involved in composing music for some great TV series, which we talk about with her. It's going to be a fun one. So stay tuned and we'll be right back. Being the big vinyl lover that I am, I'm proud to tell you about Joe's Albums in their two locations. The original shop at 317 Main Street in downtown Worcester, Massachusetts, and their second location out in Western Mass at 5 Market Street, Northampton. Both of these shops are loaded with both new and used vinyl. It's hard to walk in either shop and walk out empty-handed due to their amazing collection of records and other cool goodies like t-shirts, mugs, posters, etc. If you can't find what you're looking for in the retail stores, check out their website, joesalbums.com. Thank you, Joe, for being so cool. That's right. If you heard that spot a couple of minutes ago for Joe's Albums, great time of the year to buy some records for your loved ones. It's holiday season, so go visit Joe. All right, the art and music show at New Alliance Gallery that I hyped you about in the last two episodes was this past weekend. It was a blast. Thank you to all the cool people, especially my listeners who showed up from the Boston area. It made me really excited that people were coming up to me and talking about my podcast and checking out my art. So thank you very much. Alvin Long, who curates the gallery and is one of the many primary artists that is in the gallery and usually has art up on the wall, told me the next day that might have been the most well-attended show in the five-year existence of their Somerville location. So that is equally exciting. The bands Wrong, R-O-N-G, and Miracle Blood both drew very well, and all the artists had great turnouts, a lot of impressive stuff. Former Scruffy the Cat singer-guitarist Stephen Fredette had some incredible art made out of furniture and stuff. It was really, really good, as did Georgia Kennedy and a bunch of the other artists that were there, all cool too. It was great to see so many friends there as well. I had a blast. The art from this show will be up throughout the month of December and into January. So if you're in the Somerville area, please stop by the studio, check it out. All right, one other thing I want to tell you about. I was a guest on the Chord Progression podcast, great podcast out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And the host, Kevin, and yours truly had a fun time. Please go check that out. You can actually watch the whole episode on YouTube or listen to it on all the same platforms where you hear this show. Okay, check this out, and we'll do a little more intro on Anna Warnaker, and then we'll play our fun talk for you. Attention guitar players, I know you're out there. I have some exciting news for you. You ready? Put down that sixth string and listen. Stomp Underfoot are handmade guitar pedals by fuzz-obsessed Matt Pascarella. Matt makes every pedal using quality, new, old stock, obsolete, and rare through hole components. I know you know what that means if you're a guitar player, right? Every pedal is also entirely hand-wired, tested, and ready to go. If you want high-quality handmade pedals, check out Stomp Underfoot at stompunderfoot.com. I remember the first time, or pretty close to the first time, that I heard That Dog. I was working at Sunset and La Brea in Hollywood for A&M Records, and I bought their debut CD, the self-titled 1994 release on the Geffen imprint, DGC Records, and the band immediately caught my attention. And his amazing writing, two of the Hayden triplets, daughters of Charlie Hayden, Petra on violin and Rachel on bass, both contributing fantastic background vocals. They had their own sound. They had a great drummer, Tony Maxwell. They were solid alt rock band with the violin giving their sound an interesting twist. And on their second album, the 1995 Totally Crushed Out, that was no sophomore jinx. It even had a great single, the song He's Kissing Christian, which a lot of people know the band by. It was accompanied by a great video. The band always did really cool videos. Even Anna's solo videos are great. In 1997 came Retreat from the Sun. In my opinion, the band's most stellar album. You may have heard me jokingly referencing the song Minneapolis on the show more than once. I think I do it every time someone from Minneapolis is on the show. And we've had a bunch of people from Minneapolis on the show. It's my favorite That Dog song, without a doubt. Unfortunately, That Dog disbanded after those three records, but they did reunite and play some shows around 2011-12 and release a fourth album, Old LP, in 2019 as a three-piece minus Petra Hayden. It's another gem, though. I highly recommend that one. In between all that, Anna put out two solo records and started doing more work as a composer, something she's done all along. Some of her most recent work includes High School, which is that great series about Tina and Sarah's high school years, Shrill, which I believe was on Hulu, and the very popular Yellow Jackets. And there's a lot more. I love just about everything about Anna Warnaker. I love everything she's done. Believe me, she is incredible. One of my favorites. Did I gush enough? I was beyond excited to have her on the show. All right, I can't hold it anymore. I've got to get to it. So here I am talking with the incredibly, extremely, immensely talented Anna Warnaker. Welcome, YouTube users. This is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. If you want to hear the entire show with intros, outros, and music, please go to Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. I am so excited that Anna Warnaker is here today. Hi, Anna.
Hello.
I hope you don't mind if I go back and ask you about your history, because
not at all.
Been following you for a while. What was it like growing up with a father who was a record executive and a mother who was an actress? What was that like for you as a child?
I don't know. I mean, it was interesting, I would say. I mean, my childhood is a little bit of a blur, but it was cool, you know, visiting my dad at work, because work meant the office, which I actually loved, or the studio, which I also loved, and didn't really understand. But, you know, frankly, it was only his work that I was exposed to. Like, everything else was, I would say, normal-ish. But, you know, there was no, like, you need to be a performer or anything like that.
Was music a large part of your household when you were around the house? Did your parents listen to music a lot?
No.
I know your brother Joey, who has had a great career, Beck, REM, Roger Waters, was, besides Joey, did Joey start playing? Like, he was a few years older than you, right?
Yeah, he's 3 years older. Yes, he played a lot of music for me, but, like, he was into, like, Led Zeppelin and Kiss and stuff, and Van Halen, which I liked, but I gravitated more towards the Beatles and, like, Carole King and stuff like that when we were little. But yeah, he always had a good influence on me. But no, not a lot of music in the house. I'd listen to the albums my dad was working on or had just finished. But other than that, no. Not really.
Wow.
And I'm like that too. I don't really like a lot of music in the house. It's happening in here all the time. So I kind of like a break, but my husband doesn't love that about me.
Who's a musician also, right?
He is a musician also.
Did you start playing music at a young age?
I learned the basics of piano, and then I wasn't really into it. And then I knew I could sing because I would sing along with stuff, but I had no ambition at all to be a musician. And it all kind of happened accidentally. Because I'm too reasonable to make a choice like that. And even when I felt like the choice was made for me by like fate or whatever, I felt too reasonable for it. So I started playing guitar almost as like a joke. And I wasn't playing like regular guitar. It was like, I was just playing bar chords. It was tuned to a chord. And so I was just playing like that. But it came so easily. And I remember, but I didn't realize that. So I remember writing some songs and sending them to my brother who was off at college. And he was like, what is this? These are actually good. And I was like, they are? I don't know. And then that kind of sparked it. But I didn't want to leave college. I always felt like, you know, you got to be responsible, totally my own thing.
Did your parents get you the guitar? Did you ask them for the guitar?
No. It was my brother's guitar. He's left-handed. I'm not. And I think I just like took it. And then a friend of mine, I was like, I don't know what to do with this. And a friend of ours tuned it to a bar chord and just said, just move your finger up and down the fret. Start there. And I was like, okay. And then it was just like an explosion in my brain.
Now I've heard in a lot of interviews that dog all met in school. Was that like Crossroads in Santa Monica?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I have to ask you about that high school because I looked it up and I could not believe the list of people that went to school there.
I know.
Is that like a celebrity high school, pretty much?
Well, I
or
mean,
children of celebrities, I mean.
I mean, I honestly, I guess, but it wasn't even that, like, nobody cared. It wasn't like that, you know, like, it wasn't like, I think nowadays, it's very much like that, where people are very aware of that. It's about, there's a lot of wealth. And at the time, it was kind of like, it wasn't this competitive school. It was kind of like this, the arty school where weirdos kind of went. And we happened to be a bunch of weirdos at the same time who became incredibly creative and some of us very successful.
And you met the Haydens all there and Tony?
Tony went there, but not when I went there. Tony lived down the street from my brother and I, and he and my brother were best friends. I mean, they're still very, very close. And so he was just Joey's friend, Tony, who I loved. And the Haydens I met at school. But we weren't even that close, but you know, we liked each other and I knew they could sing. And I think by the time we had all graduated high school and I'd written these songs and I realized like, oh, maybe I should take this a little seriously. Like, I don't need to make it my career, but like, wouldn't kill me to have a band. And so, you know, I immediately thought of Rachel because I knew she, at the time I thought she played drums, which she can, but then we, you know, she ended up saying, actually, I'd like to play bass. And I was like, okay, cool. Guess I'll play guitar. It was very, you know, 90s grungy.
So That Dog was basically your first band?
The first and only, yeah.
Wow. And you said that you had already been in college by the time?
Yes. I was in my first year of college when I started writing songs. So I was, around there. And they didn't go away to school either. I went to school in LA and so did they. So I knew they were around, or actually Rachel. I didn't know from Petra. I just knew she could sing. And I knew that I always had these three-part harmonies in my head. Every time I would four-track something, it was like guitar and then three-part harmonies. So when I ended up, you know, reaching out to Rachel, it was actually adorable. Like, I went to her mom's house and sat on her bedroom floor and played her my songs. And she was so into it. And then Petra walked by and was like, I want to be in the band too. Like, it was adorable. And I don't even think I knew she played violin. I was like, well, what do you play? She was like, violin. I was like, okay, cool. I love strings. Let's go.
And I was going to ask you about that. What if it was a plan right away to incorporate the violin into the band sound? How did it just happen by accident?
I know, like, given my now, you know, many years later, I understand my musical makeup, what goes on in here. And so strings were going to be a part of it, but it was not intentional. It was literally what she played. And so, and she's, you know, so good. And so it was just very natural for all of us when we would sit down and I would play these melancholy little weirdo pop songs and then we'd sing, and you know, it all fell together really naturally. I mean, again, I had no intentions of making it a real thing. It just kind of happened. It was a moment in time.
How did Tony come into the band? Like, you knew him, but did you just ask him, you want to play drums with us? Or
he graduated college and he was living in New York. And I think when I wrote those songs and sent them to my brother, I also sent them to Tony. And Tony was like, what are you going to do with this? And I said, well, actually just got together with Rachel Hayden and we're going to do a band. And he was like, he's a singer and a guitar player. Like, he's very, very talented at that. And he was like, well, I'll play drum, or if you want, I can play drums. I'm moving back to LA. And I was like, okay. And then, you know, we just kind of threw it together. It was good that that was not his instrument, because even though our instruments were our instrument, we had no idea what we were doing. So it was good that he had also kind of like a limitation, because the band, that was kind of what was so special about the beginning of that band, was that you never knew if we were going to get through the song. You know, everything was so fragile because no one knew what they were doing, but we all had this natural talent that was stronger than all of us. And then we had this great chemistry.
Wow. That's hard to believe that, because you guys are all so talented. Wow. Did you play, like when you started rehearsing, what did you do? Get like practice at someone's house or get a rehearsal space? Or
we practiced in Tony's garage.
So you are a garage band.
We are a garage band.
What about gigs? When did you, do you remember your first gig?
Well, I can't remember if it was at Jabberjaw or the Music Machine. Some people say Jabberjaw. I think it was at the Music Machine. And we were so nervous. It was traumatic, basically, where I was like, I don't want to feel like this. This is horrible and so frightening. And I think I played with my back to the audience. Because I was like, one of my issues about performing was that, like, I don't want to be vain. I don't want to be arrogant. Like, I think I had an association to being a performer, which is okay. It's okay to be those things when you're performing. Like, it's good. It's helpful. And I just was like allergic to it. And so that part was always really hard for me. I never wanted to perform live, but they did. So I was like, okay, you know, I didn't want to go on tour, but they did. So, you know, it's like, I don't know that I was built for that part of the job.
I believe that. And that's interesting to me, because I don't really think of you guys as a live band. I think of you as a great studio band, you know, but when you did the first gig, wherever it was, at one of those two venues, did you have a lot of friends that showed up? I mean, was there a buzz right from the beginning?
Yes, it was the weirdest thing ever. Well, if it was the Jabberjaw show, we were opening up for my brother's band. So, and they had a following. Walt Mink was his first band.
Yeah, right.
And so we would have had friends there. And then if it was the Music Machine, it couldn't have been the Music Machine, actually, because I feel like there were like industry people there and there was no reason why they would have been at our first show. But whatever. I don't know.
Did the Geffen deal happen really quickly after you formed as a band?
So, okay. I didn't want to be a performer and I didn't want to go on tour. I just wanted to make albums. I wanted to be a studio band.
I believe and, that. Yeah.
I didn't have rock star ambitions and, I don't know. I think, I don't know where any of this came from. Cause my brother was like in Walt Mink successfully touring and doing great. And, you know, my dad had nurtured all of these very interesting careers for my entire life.
Yeah.
And I was still like, well, I'm going to need to get a degree and get a job. I don't know why I was like that. But I was, I'm grateful that I was like that. I just wanted to be on like a super indie label. I wanted creative control. I didn't want to worry about that kind of stuff. We weren't looking into doing these elaborate recordings, so we didn't need a lot of money. It was bare bones. It was like, I wanted to be on Caroline because my brother was on Caroline. I mean, the big dream was 4AD to us because we loved so many of those bands. But Caroline was interested, but when Caroline became interested, all of a sudden, so did all of these other labels and then all of these major labels. And I was like managing the business. I was 19. It was ridiculous. And I was just like, this is out of control and felt really bizarre. And when we were turning stuff down left and right, like this is just the opposite of everyone's experience and my experience after that dog. Turning people down left and right, major labels calling, people wanting to get involved. And I was like, this is a brand new band. Like, we don't even know how to play our instruments. This is bizarre. And when Geffen called, they had, you know, Nirvana and they had Sonic Youth. And it was like, okay, we're allowed to be messy and we're allowed to be angsty. And I wanted that in the contract, not those words, but like that was it. We were promised everything that we wanted. And on top of it, it was an incredible roster to be affiliated with. And the people were very creative and cool. And it was absolutely not what I thought we should have done, but it's cool that we got to. And then 4AD called after we signed the deal. And we were like spoiled, like so lucky, but like so sad because like there was a real creative connection there with Ivo, who ran it and created it. And so Geffen said, well, they can put out the first album in Europe. They were like, great. We want you to be happy. It was crazy. And so they did. And so we got to work with them. And Ivo was amazing. And we got to work with Geffen for the three albums. And it ended up being great.
Who was it at Geffen that was like spearheading the whole that
it
dog?
It was Tony Berg was the one that signed us. And then we worked with Luke Wood, who went on to DreamWorks and Beats.
Yeah.
And whatever. And Luke was a publicist at the time and he was friends with Tony. And so we were friends with him and liked his music sensibility. And I guess he wanted to, you know, kind of move up, you know, he had a lot of creative ideas and wanted to move up in his position. And so we gave him his start an A&R person.
That's great. It was the second record, Totally Crushed Out, that really started to get you guys' attention. Now, I didn't want to ask you this, but you seemed very open to answering any questions. When I told people I was interviewing you, yeah, three people said, you got to ask about He's Kissing Christian. What's the song about? You know, because people have always been trying to figure that out. And I don't think I haven't figured it out. If you want to tell me what it's about or us or our listeners, you can. If you don't have to. It's a great song, great video. Thank you. It really got the band a lot of attention at that time, I thought.
It did. And then the record was, it didn't like take off from there. So I think we always felt like, but now, I mean, that might be my favorite album. Actually, I like the most recent one. Anyhow, the song is about, we were all very spin the bottle-y and, you know.
That was in the video, yeah.
Fluid with having fun like that. Like very PG and sweet. And someone I think I was vaguely dating at the time made out with this guy, Christian, and maybe they didn't even make out, actually. I don't even remember, frankly. I just know that it kind of like, it sounded like something to me. And all of the songs are diary entries for the most part. Some of them are made up stories, but like that was just a kind of a moment in that time.
Well, so you write mostly out of emotion and feeling rather than force yourself through. I love that. I love that. Yeah. I know you just said Totally Crushed was your favorite record. And I love old LP. I've got it right here. It's one of my props I was holding on to. But Retreat from the Sun to me is my personal favorite.
It seems to be everybody's.
Well, Brad Wood, I thought it was a really smart move for you guys to work with him. And, you know, I'm Gonna See You, Never Say Never. My favorite That Dog song is Minneapolis. I'm sure I'm not the only one. But what was that? What made you guys go to Brad? Did it have anything to do with Liz Phair or anything like that?
I got super into Liz Phair. I didn't really like Exile in Guyville when it first came out. And then, I don't know, somebody was like, just listen to it for the songs. And so I did. And I was like, okay. And then I got into it. And I was like, this is good. I actually wrote Retreat from the Sun as a solo album, and I was set up to do it with Brad. And at the very last second, Luke suggested doing it with the band, and I said, okay.
You did that in Chicago?
No, we did it here.
Oh, he came to LA to record?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know he was based out of Chicago at the time. Why do you think that the band didn't really, I bought all your records. I even have your solo records, and we'll talk about that in a minute. I don't understand why That Dog didn't explode. Do you have any opinion at all about that? It probably doesn't matter to you now, but.
Yeah, I mean, I guess at the time, like everyone was exploding and we were on this trajectory. And so it was a little bit of a letdown. At the same time, internally, it wasn't sustainable. And there were issues that were too hard for me to be around. And for me to be able to trust my environment. And I didn't want to tour anyway. So it was almost like, it took me a while, but I definitely was like, it's such a blessing that it didn't take off in that way, because it would have been, there would have been a different level of responsibility and the motivation.
It would have kept you on the road, right?
Well, it would have kept me on the road, but there would have been a different level of pressure where it would have been more of a machine that people were relying on. And all they relied on with us was, we attracted a lot of great bands to the label. We were a calling card in that way, not to, you know, toot our own horn, but like we had this sense of integrity. Not everybody thought so because of our dads or whatever, and that we were on a major label, but whatever that was carried through and seemed to be worth something to them if on the like business side of that. I also think that I wasn't interested in trying to write hit songs or pop songs. And if my songs weren't gonna land, that was okay with me in a way. And with Retreat from the Sun, like I definitely, that's when I met Steve, and Steve is in Red Cross, and I got really into Red Cross and was like, wait, I can put a song together. Like, this isn't just like, what happens if I try a little bit? Is kind of, not that I was like laissez-faire about it, but it was like, what happens if I actually put, don't just like barf it out and let it just be that? Like, what if I actually try? And that's what Retreat from the Sun was. It was me kind of to trying to be a grown up and show my boyfriend, now husband, you know, look what I can do.
I wasn't going to ask you this, but it just popped into my head. Did you know Bill Bartell very well?
I did.
I knew Bill. Bill is a good guy. When I worked at Enigma Records, he did the Gassetanka thing. And then when I was a Giant, he Tater Tots. I think you, didn't you have something to do with Tater Tots?
Yeah. Yeah, Steve was, I think Steve was in Tater Tots.
Yeah, he was.
Oh yeah, Bill.
So when, once the, that dog thing ended, it wasn't until about 2002, according to my notes here, that you started 5'2" Records. Did you take a break or something in that period, or what were you doing during that period?
I started to take songwriting very seriously, and kind of because of that, I wanted to try out different styles. And the industry had kind of changed, and in you know, like, it was Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears and Backstreet Boys, like, that was the new focus. And I was like, oh, there's not, that's not my thing, you know, like, maybe I could write on a song that one of those people would do, but I'm certainly not gonna, that's not, you know, it's not going to be me. And then I wasn't a Lilith Fair artist either.
Right.
So I think I was trying to find my identity. And it's hard because, you know, that dog is, I'm not trying to take away from anyone in the band, but it comes out of my head. That sound comes out of my head. And then we all execute it into what it is. But it's all here. And when I'm not doing it with them, then I don't want to do that. And so
interesting.
I which I'm actually trying to reconcile with right now, because I'm like, well, if it all starts with you, why don't you just do whatever you want? But I wanted to try everything but what I was doing. And so that was also kind of hard to figure out, like, where do I fit in? At the same time, I started scoring and for TV, which was a great creative outlet and challenge, and something, the amount of work was overwhelming, it was definitely a more comfortable work zone for me because it was at home and it was recording and it was quick paced. So you didn't have to make anything perfect, and you got to just do it. And it actually paid, which is not something that I was used to. because, you know, we'd put all of our, you know, we'd make our albums and then whatever was left over, we'd all share and live off of and pay out our tours with, you know, like, it was, we were very responsible. So it was nice to get paid. And then I also started writing for theater. So I started like all of these extra outside writing things, theater, TV commercials, and then doing scoring. And it was very hard to find support as an artist. It probably would have been if I was still in that dog as well. But I didn't really get that then. And then I was pissed. Why didn't I do the album by myself when it was a solo album? And then I probably would have been in a different position and blah, blah, blah. But I think it all kind of led to where I need to be.
But then you ended up making an absolutely fantastic record. The solo record. One of my favorite tunes, I Wish You Well. Joey played on that too, right?
Yeah. Joey played on, God, that one was so long ago.
2002.
Yeah, I know. I haven't heard it in years. I thought, well, why don't I start a label? I do like doing business, and there's a new business model that can be done where artists share in profits, and it's artist driven, and it's song driven and licensing driven. And I just like had this, you know, kind of business model in my head, which then people really actually executed. What was hard was launching it for myself and counting pennies, it was too much. It was too much. I mean, we did put out some other stuff. We put out a Muffs album and Steve had a solo thing that he did. Like, we put some stuff out and it was cool. But I think after a while I was like, this isn't, I can't put my eggs into this basket.
It was with Charlotte from the Go-Go's.
Yes.
Did you guys go to school together too?
No, Charlotte is a bit older than me. Charlotte is my sister-in-law. She is married to Steve's
brother.
Older.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. She is.
So,
I knew that.
And we became, before Steve and I even became a couple, I met Jeff and Charlotte. They came to a That Dog Show and they were like, oh my God, who is this girl? Charlotte wanted to write with me. And then I was opening up for the Go-Go's and I was opening up for Red Cross. And she and I clicked. We just really clicked. And we're still very, very close.
The only time I look at you is on a rock and roll poster.
Mm-hmm.
Was that about someone in particular? Or was that someone that you thought was thinking of you?
No. The honest story about that song is that I had written a bunch of different songs and they were all very angry because that's generally where I go with songs. And I played them for my brother and he was like, you gotta have like a happier song. And I was like, okay. And so then, like, kind of out of spite, I wrote that song. And it's about that dog.
The video is great. Oh, it is. The video for that is fantastic. You must have had a lot. I meant to mention that before. You make really great videos and you still are.
Oh my God, thank you.
I mean, we're going to talk about the old LP in a minute, but you know, your videos, wow. I know you did Z Malibu Kids for a little while. It was more for fun, right?
Yeah, it was just a studio project that Jeff was kind of driving the boat on that. And I had some stuff I would do, or he'd say, come over and sing on something. And I'd, okay. It was more for a great child.
And then a few years later, you got really deep with How Am I Doing? I remember the first time I heard that, I was like, wow, that is just fantastic. And it ended up on a TV show, right?
It certainly did. I had avoided watching Grey's Anatomy for some reason. And someone was like, you got to watch it. So I watched it and became obsessed. And I think I was scoring a show where the music supervisor was from Grey's Anatomy, was working on that show. And so when I finally met her, I was like, I got to send you this song, which is so not my thing. I have a hard time promoting myself. And I was like, I'm obsessed with Grey's Anatomy right now. I got to send you this song. And they like gave me a very, very nice position.
It was like the end of a show or something. I wasn't a fan
of the
show, but
it was the beginning of a spinoff. And it was like, the song is really short. They had to actually like edit it so it was twice as long. It was a great moment for me.
You had that funny video too. Once again, with the videos, the tennis video. I like at the end when they show the machine. That was the best part of the video, I remember. And that song ended up on California Fade years later. What was the thought process behind that? You just figured it never was on an album. Let's put it on an album. Did you re-record it? I can't remember.
No. Oh, no, I didn't. I took forever to make that album. I think that I was scoring and then I was working in theater and then I was writing songs. I was just kind of like bouncing around and when I was engineering everything. So when it was just on me, I could take as long as I wanted. And it took a very long time, which is something that ends up happening if I'm in charge of making the album.
And Joey and Steve and Pat Smear played on that record. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I imagine you probably knew Pat for a long time because he's another LA guy.
Yes, I met Pat a couple weeks after Kurt Cobain died. Pat was back to LA and had actually heard about that dog from the Nirvana camp. I guess they had just discovered the single and they loved that. They would listen to that album and he was like, who is she? And so he sought me out and we became best friends like within 5 seconds. And he's still one of my closest friends and I love him dearly.
Yeah, he seems like a really nice guy. He goes way back to the Germs.
Wow. Way back, yeah.
I'm going to fast forward a little bit here because I want to get into your composing because it's really good. But I wanted to talk about Old LP first. Uh-huh. And that's why I found this is the only That Dog. I have the CDs, but this is the only vinyl I have. And for you people listening, I'm holding the album up. It's fantastic. I wanted to take the poster out and stick it on the wall behind me, but I thought of doing that too late, unfortunately.
It's the thought that counts.
Yeah, you came back as a three-piece. And what made you reunite? Was there just a demand for the band?
Tony's daughters, Tony has two beautiful daughters, and they, as they started to grow up, and they would learn about what one of the things that daddy did, and they knew me because every time, you know, Tony lives in New York, but every time he would come here, I would see them. And Tony has this wonderful wife who kept saying like, when are you going to do it? And I was like, ugh, never. No, no, no. And then the girls kept getting older and kept asking. And I was like, why am I saying no to them? Like, what is the reason?
And yeah,
the reason
why?
Didn't stand up. The reason was, the questions were, why are you not honoring your catalog? If you're this, if you think of yourself as this songwriter and this person with an interesting history, why are you blocking it like this? It doesn't make sense because it was difficult at the end. It was really painful at the end. So it's over. And then I realized, no, these are a part of me. This is me. I can't do that to myself. And then I started to kind of dip my toes in, and the desire from fans started to really start surfacing on the internet. And then I started to feel like a jerk because I was like, well, what's my problem? And I mean, I know what it is. It's hard. It's when you band members, I don't know if you've been in bands, but band members can be like wives and husbands. And sometimes when you get a divorce, you were supposed to get a divorce. And so I didn't really want to go back into that, but I was a lot older and wiser. And I thought, well, why not? And there were, you know, potentially better vibes to happen. And Rachel always wanted to do it. She would check in with me every couple of years and say, please, can we? And I'd be like, ugh, no. But finally, I was open to it. And the four of us got together to do some reunion shows. And I felt like everyone had grown so much and we were doing, and it was so fun and back to where it started. And then I started to get inspired. Also, Rachel was like, write new songs, write new songs. And I was like, no, this is just reunion stuff. And then I kind of like fell back in and I started to write stuff. And Petra did not want to do anything new. She was not into it. And it was hard because, you know, like I was saying, like, even if it's all my idea, if it's not all of us, then I didn't want to do that. And I kind of had to have a big reckoning with myself about like, do you really need her? You like, I write string sections and I write all the harmonies. So do I really, really need her? And I didn't want to do it without her, but I also didn't want to not do it because she didn't want to. So that kind of pushed it into the three piece. And I'm so glad. It was another happy accident that was painful, you know, like us not making it big or her not wanting to do it. It's like, it opened me up in a different way. And so, you know, as hard as it, as painful as it was definitely worth it.
And you guys made that hilariously funny video. with Jack Black and Maya Rudolph. I might as well ask you this now. I was going to wait, but do you know Maya's father, Dick, by any chance?
I do. I love Dick.
Dick, I worked for Dick for 2 years, Third Stone
Really?
Music. Yeah.
Okay.
Maya actually came into my office and used to hang out on my couch in my office. I actually took a photograph of her. This was in 1990, so I think she was probably still in high school or maybe just getting out of high school.
Yeah. We graduated in 90.
And I was blown away when one day someone said to me, is that Maya Rudolph? Is that Dick Rudolph's daughter? I was like, what? Because she was on TV, you know, on Saturday Night Live. So Jack must be a friend of yours from high school, too, because you got them both to come and play in that video. That was fantastic.
Yeah, I'm still very close with Maya. We have stayed in touch and throughout all of these years. And Jack, oddly enough, is married to Rachel and Petra's sister.
That's right. He is.
And our kids have gone to school together and still do since third grade. And now they're in ninth grade. And my son and their sons are friends. And it's just crazy.
That's fantastic. Do they go to the Crossroads school also in Santa Monica?
No. But they go to a school that was started by the same person who started Crossroads. It's a very small, weird. It's kind of like the Crossroads I went to, a very condensed version of it. Because it's I don't want to say janky, but it's just brand new. It's very new and it's homegrown, which Crossroads was when we were all there. So my son and their sons go there and Maya's kids go to a different school.
Have you seen Dick lately?
I saw Dick probably a year ago. He's the best. I love him.
Yeah, I had a great time. We worked for Michael Douglas. It was Michael Douglas' star. I was working for record labels. And then one day I got this job doing publishing and working on films with Dick. And
that's the best.
It was a great experience. He knew everybody too.
Dick, I had to interview someone for a class in college, I think. And I chose Dick. And he gave me a piece of advice that stuck with me and has driven my entire career. And that was, you don't have to just do one thing. There's all kinds of things that you can do. You don't have to just be one thing. He was like, I was a guitar player, a songwriter, a producer, and now I'm doing soundtracks and I'm doing publishing. And then I do. And I was like, oh, and it was major for me because otherwise I think I may have been like, oh, I didn't make it in a band. And what am I supposed to do with myself? And it's like, no, you can do a whole bunch of things. And I did, and I still do.
He was a really positive person. That's what I remember about him. And that was a great thing about him. One more thing about the old LP record, the mini documentary that you did with Maya also. And she sang on that track. That was fascinating. I watched it twice this morning again. I'd seen it when it came out and I watched it again. It was just brilliant. Brilliant.
Our friend Maya and I share a best friend, Mary Wigmore, who's a filmmaker and a director. And she did the How Am I Doing video. And she also did, which we shot at Maya's house, actually. And then she did the mini documentary. And she's just so good at that. I mean, it's hard for me to watch because it's hard to watch yourself, but it felt like I wanted to have Maya included because I kind of felt like, well, if we're not going to have Petra, then let's have everyone else in the That Dog family. And Maya was a part of our family. She initially was going to play drums before Tony, but she couldn't play drums. And then she went off to college out of town. And so it didn't work out.
He was going to play drums?
Yeah. She was like, I'll listen. You know, we were all just like, whatever. But I liked, so she was one of our extended family members. And then also, you know, the song was about being able to hear a loved one or someone, you can feel their life in a recording that you're listening to. You can feel it.
Yeah.
And so I felt like it was kind of fitting to have her sing on it with, you know, because of her mother, who
Minnie Riperton,
who my son is now listening to all the time, which is crazy. He's 14.
I think Loving You is like right up there with Yesterday as one of the most covered songs around the world, you know, in every country it's been covered.
It's so beautiful.
Okay, so you have been a composer for a long time, so it seems like you're new at this, but you're really not. Yellow Jackets really got a lot of attention. Yeah. And then following that up with High School, oh my God. Yellow Jackets, you co-wrote the song No Return with Craig Wendren. And when I saw that name, I was like, where do I know that name from? And then it hit me, shudder to think. Yeah. How did you two ever end up working together?
So Mary Wigmore, who I just talked about, who did some of the That Dog videos, her son and Craig's son went to preschool together. And she would always talk about her friend Craig that I would love so much. And I was always like, blah, 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 your other friend Craig. And then finally, we were at a birthday party for one of the kids. And she introduced us and we started talking. And like, we just became, it was just like, we couldn't stop. I probably for 2 hours at a kid's birthday party, which you really shouldn't do because you have to watch your kid. But, and then we ended up at the same elementary school and they were our buddy family. I mean, it was just ridiculous. He lives down the street from me as well. So like, there was just a lot of like, we were in each other's stratosphere. We probably have been for the past 20 years, but never knew it. We never played together, but we were probably in the same room 100 times. And so we decided like, let's, you know, he became incredibly successful as a composer, as I was just like kind of popping in and out of it whenever a project would come up. I wasn't pursuing it. And then I started to want to pursue it a little bit more. And we talked about working on something together and we kind of put out there what we would want to do. And that's when Shrill came along. And one of my close friends is an executive producer and co-creator of Shrill, and the director of it suggested Craig, and she had suggested me, and then she told me, and I said, well, why don't we do it together? We've been wanting to do something together. And so everyone agreed, and they hired us, and that started this very prolific relationship. I would say Craig feels like one, you know, I've only been in That Dog officially as a band, but I feel like my relationship with Craig is like a band. It feels like that, but in a good way.
It's really interesting that both of you were signed to major label deals in the 90s, and both the bands had like, you think they had amazing upside, and it just didn't totally explode for either, because Shudder to Think had a really good buzz going too around 94, 95.
Yeah.
The song No Return that you wrote, I mean, Yellow Jackets, I mean, the big buzz, you know, they put the record out with all the different people that performed on it. You know, I mean, it's a really, you must be excited about that project.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, I will say one of the things I like about working on TV is that there's so many different styles, and I kind of like that a lot of the time I've worked in a lot of comedy, so I kind of like that it's real light. But it's very rare that you get to put your guts into something like this. And Craig and I had worked on Shrill, which was super fun. It was like, you know, our first album. And then we worked on another TV show called Republic of Sarah, where we kind of like got our rock thing together. And then, but we were like, oh, we have a lot more we can be doing together. There's a lot more. Like, we don't have to keep it so light and keep it so TV, even though I love TV. I'm doing air quotes when I say TV. And, but with Yellow Jackets, it was like, all right, we're going to get gnarly here. But of course, we thought it was TV and they weren't going to let us. And so we just kind of scratched the surface. But what turned out was that the creators were like, no, 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 go even more. And every time we would turn something in, they would say even more, even more. So then we started going, all right, then. And it turned into this crazy land. It's a very, it's a beast.
Absolutely. Now, did you know Clea DuVall or Tegan and Sarah beforehand? I mean, how did you end up getting involved in high school? I watched that. I didn't see Yellow Jackets, but high school I did. I thought the series was fantastic.
I love high school. Oh, I love that.
Episode 3, you have that catchy song, that's mm-hmm. yours, right? And I loved everything about that show, and I can't believe they're saying there's not going to be a second season for that.
Have they announced that? Because I think it's still maybe, but who knows, unless they announced it recently.
They didn't announce it, but I thought
they have
maybe
not picked it up yet.
Yeah.
I'm still holding on to hope. I'm like, because I know it's written and it was so good. That was one of my absolute favorite shows to work on. I did know Clea back in the 90s. We were in similar circles, but we never really hung out that much. But we definitely knew each other. And when I had met, I believe, Sarah through a mutual friend years ago, but we didn't really know each other. But, you know, they were so great. Tegan, Sarah, everyone involved in that show. It was the most pleasant, creative, cool environment. Clea is one of my favorite people to work with. She's very direct. She knows exactly the direction to go in. She's great with notes. And she's just, it was so fun to write stuff for her because I would know, like, oh God, she's going to love this. And you don't usually know that with people that you're working for. You know, it's like, it's very hit or miss. And I've had to build up a very thick skin. But with her, it was just like, it was so fun.
Yeah, what drew me to that is the Con. So jealous. They have a lot of good records, but the Con album, when I first heard that, it became one of my favorite albums of all time.
They're great. I mean, they're so nice. They were excellent to work with. I did a cover of Today, the Smashing Pumpkins song, with them, and they were just. It was interesting because, you know, they're twins, and I was in a band with triplets, two or three. And I just, you know, I don't think that Tegan and Sarah and the way that they operate is the norm, but it was just like, damn, I wish it could have been more like that, because their heads are just, they just don't fuck around. They're like, I mean, I'm sure they do, but I'm just like, they're pleasant and they get the job done and they're open-minded and they're creative and they're driven and they're all of the things. And it's very unusual that people are like that, and sisters and twins.
I love them.
I absolutely loved working with them.
I saw them live a few times and I was just like, wow, this is really good.
I just
good.
Saw them for the first time. They played, like, I don't know, 6 months ago or something. And I was like, I had the best time. They're so good.
Wow. Okay. So you might have more than this, but the last thing I have is Long Gone from School Spirits, mm-hmm. Paramount Plus. So you're on a roll now with these TV shows.
I hope so.
You are, though.
Well, we've had a strike. I mean, I've been out of work.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
So, you know, it's like, I really hope so. I have the people that I work with are wonderful, and I've really been able to work on some great stuff, which has allowed me to be able to show all these different sides of my possibilities and creativity. But I mean, this definitely, while I am a songwriter in my core and everything, I love composing. It is the job I can commit to 1,000,000%. You know, I work in my house. I even work in my living room sometimes. You know, like, I have, you know, two setups, and mostly I just roll a desk around my house to wherever I feel like being to work and can still be a mom and still, you know, like, it's just, I figured it out, hopefully. So I just pray that I continue the role for a long time. I love it.
I love everything you do.
Thank you. That's so nice.
I mean, I'm so happy to see, you know, I mean, I was such a fan of yours in the 90s. I was working at A&M Records, so I didn't mm-hmm. get to, like, go to a lot of shows because they'd send me out on the road with bands all the time. And I was always busy. You know how it is, you know, you get busy with your own thing. But that dog, I got every record, and then your solo records. And thank you for taking the time to talk to me. Because I wish you success with this, the composing. And I hope you make another record too someday as well.
I know. I'm thinking about it right now. I've had some nasty situations come up that drew some songs out of me. So maybe I'll have to see.
Well, thank you for coming on. Appreciate
it. Thank you. Thanks for the support. I really appreciate it. It's really nice to hear.
Wow. I know how lucky I am to get to interview these people, believe me, especially artists like Anna, who I've admired for so long. I remember trying to think of someone to call after I spoke with Anna. I got really excited for this when it was well worth it. So I wanted to hurry up and call someone and say, I just interviewed Anna Wernicke. I love talking with her. She's so cool. Definitely one of my all-time favorites. The song, by the way, after the interview was Love Story, also from the 2002 solo record, simply entitled Anna. Go out and get those That Dog records. There's four of them. They're hard to get on vinyl. Old 19, I got on vinyl. The other ones are very hard to get. They're very expensive. I have them on CD, but, you know, of course, I want them all on vinyl one day. All right. If you can reach me or send me music or write me or whatever anytime at twistedrico@gmail.com. I love hearing from you. We have an Instagram page, Threads, Facebook, YouTube, where you can actually watch the interview that Anna and I did. There's also a TikTok page at Twisted Rico, where you can watch clips from this show and many other shows. We're all over social media. You can find us there. All right. That's going to do it this time, folks. I hope you had as much fun as I did. Till the next time we say goodbye, this is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Keep the rock and roll alive.